All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I make this look good.
You are now listening
to the Movie Review Crew podcast.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
All right, welcome in. This is another edition of Movie Review Crew. I'm your host, Michael Lucas, and joining me is Brent Frugier. And
hello.
Aaron Kronikin. Sorry, I didn't
you didn't pause there for a second. No. I had to talk over you.
God, I'm sorry. Let's try this again. Brent Frugier.
Hello.
And Aaron Kronikin.
Hello.
All right, we are back on it again. God, it feels like we haven't done this for multiple weeks, even though it's only been a week.
I think we just took a week off.
Yeah, I know. It feels like forever and a half. Maybe because I didn't watch Hostage. I think that's it.
But you watched The Invisible Man?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's been a few weeks for you.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks for me.
Yeah, is the last one we did Hostage?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't on that one, so I guess it's been a couple weeks for me, I suppose.
Yeah, me and Brent have been gone for a while. I was here the week prior, but again, did not review it. Have you guys learned anything new in the past week?
Just in general?
Just in
life
general.
Lessons? Or
yeah, life lessons. Huh.
A few things to tweak my golf swing.
Aaron, like tell us about your golf outing.
Well, I shot a 62.
On how many?
On nine holes. Mm-hmm. Par 36. It was
doing
hot.
I've
used that excuse a lot. It's hot.
That's not an excuse.
It was so hot. How about that?
The clubs were so hot that like you couldn't even hold on to them. You just had to and then just like swing. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Also, I suck.
I think that might be a more applicable excuse.
There were many a time I wanted to throw or break a club, but I resisted. So
why? Why though? Don't you go into it expecting to suck?
No, because 62 is terrible even by my standards.
Fair.
So
that's fair. What's that handicap then? Like,
I don't know anything about 40? Handicaps.
I don't either.
Golf.
I assume a low handicap is good. And
yeah, well,
incredibly.
I think the highest you can get is 18.
Oh man.
Anyway, not
good.
It is related to the movie we watched. He golfed in this movie.
He did. He did.
They showed him putt once.
Yeah, once. And then he drops off his clubs at the crazy woman's. Yeah. Anyway, Brent, have you learned anything in the past week about movies or about yourself?
No.
Nah. You guys weren't part of a podcast for 2 weeks. Do you watch anything new? Or you just stay away from movies and TV for a few weeks?
Not really. Haven't really got into anything new, I suppose.
It's been a long time since there's been any new content until recently, just this past, I think it was Friday when Greyhound came out.
Yeah.
Like there hasn't been a movie or anything on a streaming service where I've been like, oh, you know what? I got to see that one.
Right. I watched a couple episodes of Handmaid's Tale. It's good. Yeah. It's good. It's not a show that I like want to go watch though. It's so dismal and disappointing. Like just from a humanity standpoint, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of real life.
Almost. Almost. And then I started watching Atlanta, and that's a really good show. I continue to recommend people to watch that. I'm like half a season in. And it is, dude, I don't care. You guys don't seem to like Donald Glover a ton. I think the dude is crazy talented.
Sure. I like Donald Glover. I've liked him since he was doing stand-up, and then he was on Community for, when that show was going on. I've always been a fan of his. I just have never seen that show, Atlanta.
I love it. I love it. I think he's an absolute genius. I haven't seen Star Wars, though. The Solo.
Yeah, I haven't seen that either. But, like, he has, like, older stand-up that, you know, like, before he was, you know, doing rap and all that, that I was really into and I liked. And there's, like, a bit that he has from when he was on, I think it was Twitter. And his name's Donald Glover. And people thought that his Twitter handle said Dong Lover because it was Don and then Glover.
Yep.
That's a terrible choice.
Isn't that great, though? A little fun tidbit about Donald Glover. This is a little tangent. I was watching an interview with John Mulaney, who I've talked about many times on this show. I think his stand-up is some of the best, and it's all on Netflix to watch. But when John Mulaney auditioned for SNL, some of the other people to audition were, like, insanely talented. Like, I think it was Donald Glover was in there. It was John Mulaney. And then the dude that actually got on SNL was, like, Bobby something or other. He's still on there. I don't remember his name.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the people who try out for it, because a lot of people have been passed up on that in the past. You go back into the past, and people like Jim Carrey were passed up on it. And there's certain things at that time, like, they might already have a guy who's that same style and they don't want to. So they, even though if they do really like him and they're really funny, they'll pass up on him. Because, like, oh, we already have this guy and he's very similar in his style and we don't need another person like that.
Yeah. Oh, it was Nick Kroll who, I mean, either way. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Nick Kroll. But it was also, damn it. This article, pop-ups happened. TJ Miller. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Moynihan was the one who ended up getting casted out of all of those. I just think it's funny. Because I think Bobby Moynihan would... I mean, you might say he's had the smaller...
I don't know who that is, to be honest. Names, you say that, and I know who it is.
Right, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I haven't watched Saturday Night Live. Like, the only thing that would ever get me to watch Saturday Night Live nowadays are the special guests. There's not a single regular cast member that makes me feel like I need to watch it.
Yeah, the last time I even watched an episode of Saturday Night Live was when Adam Sandler hosted it, and that was like, that was before the whole COVID thing. So I mean, that was a while ago.
Wasn't that when he did his
Uncut Gems
farewell homage thing to Chris Farley?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's been a while since I've actually watched an episode of that.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress. Aaron, you wanted to talk about the Greyhound, speaking of that.
Yeah, I watched it. Actually just watched it this morning. And it's a movie that... I'm going to give a spoiler-free review, but... I want to be completely honest. Obviously, and it's not hidden, we love Tom Hanks, and I count myself in as one of his biggest fans. So, like, it could be awful, but just the fact that I get to watch Tom Hanks for an hour and a half makes it more enjoyable for me. And the fact that this 2 years running because of multiple delays, this has been on my top 10 most anticipated list for the last 2 years. So I was hoping for big things. It's got Tom Hanks. I personally was not disappointed. There's a lot of reviews out there that say it's an hour and a half. So they're saying, it's too quick. There's not enough character development, but I honestly liked that because it drops you right into it. It's like we talk about a lot of times. It's like trim the fat, take out all the unnecessary stuff. Like the story is about this man and these events, and that's all we get shown. And that's why you hire somebody like Tom Hanks, because it's the subtleties that let the character develop. So I think it's definitely worth seeing. The problem is I think a lot of people will miss it because you need Apple TV Plus to see it. So I definitely highly recommend it. I'd probably give it like a 7.5 out of 10. But
interesting.
I think it's going to suffer because of Apple TV Plus, and I think Tom Hanks knows that based on the articles I've read. So, and there have been a lot of reviews I've read that said this belongs in a movie theater.
Yeah.
Because you need that sound and that. I mean, it's a lot of this is, it's about a naval convoy under attack from U-boats, and it's all about the tension and the noise and the score of it. And then when things start going down, it's like, so I think, yeah, it's definitely hurt. With a good surround sound system, it helps, but
yeah,
it's Tom just Hanks, a shame it's not a theater thing.
Yeah. Tom Hanks is not happy.
No, I imagine part of that, though, let's be honest, he was the producer on this. He lost a lot of money, I'm sure. Well, I don't know how much Apple paid for the rights, though. I'm sure they had to fork over a ton of money to beat somebody like Netflix or Hulu.
Or Amazon, for that matter.
Amazon. I mean, so it's, I think they probably didn't lose a lot of money. I think they're just, it's not going to be seen by the amount of people that it would have been seen by otherwise.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth seeing. I myself just did the free trial, literally, to watch Greyhound.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have... There's not a lot of content on Apple TV Plus right now.
That's what I was going to say. What else is on there?
Nothing, to be honest. A lot of it is, you're like, oh, they give you these suggestions. Watch this. And then you click on it, and it's like, oh, you got to go buy it in iTunes to watch it in your Apple TV Plus. So the only thing you get for free is the TV, Apple Plus content, original content, which is Greyhound. They had one a few months back called The Banker, which had Samuel Jackson and Anthony Mackie. And then they've got another movie starring Chris Evans. I think it's called Defending Jacob. But nothing...
Interesting. I
mean, they pulled the one move that would make me consider doing this whole free trial, and that was Tom Hanks movie. Yep. So that's it. They have a few shows like the Jason Momoa about the blind people, and they've got the M. Night Shyamalan TV show, which I'm not sure how many people that's going to draw, but...
I mean, he was huge in the early 2000s.
Yeah, sure.
So, interesting.
But, yeah, yeah, like that, sure.
Well, I mean, we all know how we feel about M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, I even, like... contemplated even bringing it up, seeing as how our past discussions about M. Night have
been. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I think if you're willing to try the free trial and remember to cancel before they start charging you, it's definitely worth seeing.
Sure.
How much is it a month?
Well, that's the thing. It's $4.99 a month, but
you have a lot of this
in order to access all the CBS shows or the Starz show, you have to pay additional monthly fees for that access. And it's, I mean, if you to watch anything worth seeing, you're gonna have to pay extra. So,
interesting. Would you recommend people watch it?
I would. Like I said, if you're willing to do the free trial, absolutely. It's a free Tom Hanks movie. And I think people are really hurting for new content because it's not coming out. So,
yeah.
Speaking of new content, there's also a Charlize Theron has a new action movie came out on Netflix called The Old Guard. Have you guys seen that trailer?
No.
Heard about it. I didn't really see the trailer, but like I've heard.
It looks like coming out on Netflix. Maybe just a ridiculous action movie, but with her track record of Atomic Blonde and Mad Max Fury Road, I think I'm in. So, but I haven't seen it yet. I plan to see that before next week's episode. I'll give a spoiler-free review. I'm sure Shane will see it. An action movie that's free on Netflix for Shane. Yeah, he'll see it.
I was actually just looking. It's been 5 years since Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, and they released news, I say recently, but it's probably been a few months now, that for the Furiosa prequel, they're recasting, and she's not even in it. So it's like, what's the point?
Interesting. Why?
I don't know, man, because they're probably going to bring in somebody younger.
They might turn it into like a prequel or something like that, so it's supposed to be somebody.
Well, I mean, it is a prequel, but you could still...
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense, but maybe they're going like... real young, like teenage or something like that.
Which then, I mean, you're losing your target audience for a Mad Max movie if it's some sort of YA movie.
I don't know, man. I think a lot of YAs love Mad Max.
Oh, it's
definitely their target audience and not men over 40.
Yeah, who watched the originals.
Yeah, right. But
anyway, yeah, it's a weird time for seeing new content because you mix in the fact that all of the new content is spread across 10 different platforms and not a lot of it's coming out because of COVID, and it's just a weird movie situation.
It is. I think we talked about this last episode that we did was like AMC might shutter.
Yeah.
And
I thought they just, somebody just sold a bunch of they're trying to work deals with Amazon to release Amazon movies in theaters.
And yeah. I think it was AMC. I think AMC is getting somewhat bought by Amazon and Disney.
Yep. So, I mean, you're literally going to have theaters. I mean, we complain that the only thing in theaters are Disney movies.
Yeah.
There are going to be Disney theaters now. It's going to be a thing, I think. So, yeah. Oh, gosh.
I don't know if I've brought this up on the podcast, but why hasn't Netflix gotten a theater? Like, if you have a Netflix membership, you get in for free, and then you still have to buy your popcorn that's paying your rent. Like, I don't know. I would go to a Netflix theater if I got to see movies for free. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Because they have the rights, the streaming rights. I assume that means they could show whatever they want in their theaters, and they could release movies like The Old Guard into their theaters or whatever the case is. But
yeah,
who knows? That's also, you're looking at a lot of rental costs for property and buildings. And I don't think they're hurting for money because of what's going on. They're leading the charge.
Yeah. Netflix is probably doing better than ever because of this.
I don't know about Netflix, but I did see a pretty interesting thing that since like March or whatever, since the pandemic, like Jeff Bezos, the owners of Wayfair and the owner of Zoom or whatever, the founder of Zoom, like these guys have all grown their fortunes like tens of billions of dollars. I think Bezos is up like 50 billion since the start of the pandemic. And it's like, Jesus, this is ridiculous. I mean, but I get it. Like online, you don't have to go anywhere. You can't go anywhere. It makes sense. It makes sense.
Conspiracy. Online people started it to make money.
Yep. Jeff Bezos created it.
I mean, yo,
guys, facts. People are going to take that seriously. That's a joke.
Somebody's like, I knew it. That's what I was saying the whole time.
Those movie crazy review people. Crew guys are on to something.
All of a sudden, we're getting hacked by the FBI.
Right. Well, do we want to? So, okay, real quick, before we even move further, this is Movie Review Crew. Check us out online at moviereviewcrew.com. You can request movies right on our homepage. We have The Lobster this week. We're doing, I think for most of the summer at this point, we've been doing movies that you can stream, which fits in right with the pandemic and the state of the world, blah, 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 blah. So we're doing movies to stream. So we're doing The Lobster this week. It was on Netflix. Great. Netflix?
Yes. Yep. I think it's also on Prime. I mean, it's available.
Right.
It's for the cost of a subscription without any additional cost.
Right. So. The Lobster was actually a listener pick. It came in from Larry the Lobster.
I remember.
Which I don't know if it was a SpongeBob reference. I'm hoping it was, or if it's just really good alliteration. So at that point, do we want to get into The Lobster?
Yep. I've got nothing else other than that. So let's do it.
All right, so let's get into The Lobster. It's a 2015 film, rated R, hour and 59 minutes long, comedy, drama, romance film. In a dystopian near future, single people, according to the laws of the city, are taken to the hotel, where they are obliged to find a romantic partner in 45 days, or they are transformed into beasts and sent off into the woods. I don't know why the city, the hotel, and the woods are all capitalized. It doesn't matter.
Because those are locations like Omaha or Los Angeles, I think.
See, that's the point, is you said, I think. Anyway, not the point.
I mean, in the movie, that's literally how they refer to all of those locations, is the city and the hotel. And
well, you guys are just so smart, aren't you?
Smart. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Written and directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, and starring Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, Jessica Bardem.
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, yep.
Other people.
Other people, he said.
Well, I got excited when I saw John C. Reilly, but that didn't last long. Spoiler alert for me and this movie, apparently.
Yeah. Basically, the names that you need to know were what? Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz.
Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it. Leia Seydoux, the leader of the loners. She's been in other things. People would recognize her.
Yeah.
Ben Whishaw. He plays the guy with the limp. He's in other movies.
Oh, he's in Cloud Atlas.
Yes.
I've never seen that, but I saw that it was a very highly rated film that was on Netflix. They said it's like the one most underrated film on Netflix right now.
Yeah, we won't get into it. It's a long, weird movie. But
interesting. It's got T. Hanks.
It does have our guy T. Hanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
He plays like 18 characters.
Really? T. Hanks? Or... interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody.
Critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes for The Lobster. As strange as it is, thrillingly ambitious, The Lobster is definitely an acquired taste, but for viewers with the fortitude to crack through Yorgos Lanthimos' offbeat sensibilities, it should prove as a savory cinematic treat. Whew, those are a lot of big words, and I feel like I nailed that.
Mm-hmm. You nailed did it. Well.
Thank you. On he Rotten practiced. Tomatoes.
He rehearsed before.
He did in front of a mirror.
Screw you guys. Critics score on Rotten Tomatoes 87% certified fresh, giving a score of 7.53 out of 10. Audience score of only 65%, giving a 3.43 out of 5. Rounding up, that's almost 7 out of 10.
I can see that. Like, I actually think that I actually thought the audience score would be a little lower, because this is very much so, in my opinion, a movie that critics would like, but like regular non-critics wouldn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is very much a movie that critics love. Just like Yorgos Lanthimos' other movie, Killing of a Sacred Deer.
This is much better and much more accessible than Killing of a Sacred Deer, though.
When you say accessible, you mean just like from a viewing standpoint, or like
for normal people to sit down and watch, I think they will accept this much easier than Killing of a Sacred Deer.
So, but here, the Killing of a Sacred Deer is sitting at 63% audience score.
See, that's, yeah, I don't know. This one is I think, an easier sit-through, though.
Dude, I 100% agree. Like,
and I was thinking of this, why do I think this is so much easier to get through and sit through and enjoy than, because they both use that same offbeat, like the inflection of people's voices is not quite right, and the way they deliver their lines and the actual lines that they deliver are a little off in both of them. But I think it's because this whole thing, the Lobster, is like its own new made-up reality, its own world.
Yes.
And it's easier to accept it because the rest of it is so absurd.
Exactly.
Sacred Deer is like, okay, this takes place now in our setting, but none of it fits right.
Right. That's exactly how I felt watching this. Is like, The Lobster is its own universe, and this Killing of a Sacred Deer feels like this is in our universe. It's just weird as shit.
But I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
I was like, all I'm hearing is, I haven't seen Killing of a Sacred Deer, but all I'm hearing is that I would absolutely hate that movie because I maybe enjoyed a couple scenes of this movie. So it sounds like I would just absolutely hate.
Yeah, you would.
Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Brent, for reference, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and I mean, this is not going to be a show where we're going to cross compare them. Killing of a Sacred Deer got a 2.34 from us.
Oh yeah, I know it didn't do well, because when we had to watch this one, Shane basically went off on about the director and how all his movies are just crap. basically. Sure.
Yeah, but that's wrong.
I think it's a little misguided.
It is.
I think this is probably the only movie of his that I've seen. So this is all that I have to reference him.
I understand the reaction to Killing of a Sacred Deer. I truly do like The Lobster. And I've seen, what's his other movie about the queen? What was that called? The Oscar-nominated?
Killing of a Sacred Queen Lobster.
Yep, that's the one. But anyway, yeah, I wish I could. It's called The Favorite. It was nominated in 2018 for a bunch of awards. And I actually enjoyed that one, too. I think he does definitely have his own quirky style that if you don't like it, you could probably skip all of his movies because they're just that.
Sure.
But for me, I think there was enough. Like I said, The Lobster is its own universe. And it's also ridiculous and absurd that it kind of works with his quirkiness. And I enjoyed a lot of it. It had the awkwardness. It's a lot of dark humor and a lot of awkward, interactions between people. And I just found it funny. I was chuckling a lot while watching this because half the time is out of just like, you know, you're watching something so awkward and then all the funny lines and the way they're delivered. And
I almost understand the awkwardness because these are people that are in a situation where they're being forced to find somebody to, quote, love. And, you know, like, how do you do that? Like, you can't exactly talk to them like you normally would. You have to be like, oh, hey, what do we have in common? Let's do this real quick. It's like speed dating almost, but you're
with worse consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found it absolutely hilarious to like, they have to find a defining feature that they match up with.
Yeah.
And so like, they're trying to, the one guy fakes it. So he gets nosebleeds or whatever. Well, just like,
that's why I think it's funny because it's taking a look at how relationships are viewed in real life and just ramping it up to absurdity and it, as extreme as it can go. It's like, oh, well, we can't be in love unless we have something in common. It's like, you know, sometimes that has nothing to do with it or how society looks at you a certain way if you're not part of a couple. I mean, if you're a certain age and you don't have a significant other and then you always get the questions from family members and everybody you meet and,
yep.
And then you have the counterculture, you know, like, oh, I don't need anybody else. I'm just going to stay single. So it's like these extremes, and it just makes for a funny story to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One thing I wanted to kind of clear up, what was the purpose of the people that were in the woods? Like, they were kicked out, and they were like, the woods were their asylum. But why couldn't they love each other?
Well, because like Aaron said, they go to the just huge extremes where at the hotel you have to find somebody to love. And in the woods, they're just like, well, we don't need anybody. So they made their own little rules about not loving people. Like, that's all it really was, I think. Just the extremes of couple and single.
And yeah, it's... I don't know. It was weird that... I understand their whole goal of showing and proving to the people in the hotel that forced situations of being a couple and how absurd it is because, you know, one little mishap and they'll turn on each other and things like that. But the fact that, you know, if love happened naturally in the woods, that was punishable with extreme punishment. I guess, like Brent says, just showing the other side of the coin of the hotel, but it seemed against their whole agenda against the hotel. So
yeah,
it was odd to me, but it made for a better story that their real love was the forbidden love. And
right.
And truly to me, I think that part of it worked well. I thought it was a pretty darn good love story between the two because they're just both so awkward. It was like this, and neither of them knew how to approach it and they weren't supposed to. And it was just awkward. And
was it really a love story for them though? Like a true love story? Because the they still had to have that defining feature with them to be in love. Like, oh, we're both nearsighted. That's so they thought.
The difference for them was that they fell in love and they worked at ways to be in love, even though it wasn't allowed, and they had to go create all these their own language for each other and create ways to be with each other, and having a thing in common was after falling in love, and then they just used it as a way to stay together, where the people at the hotel, it's like, that was the one thing that made them be together.
Yeah, so but even with that, like, so we're going to get into spoilers, I suppose, here. Like, after she becomes blind, they're struggling to find something that they connect with. That's why he ends up, you know.
Well, and we don't know we didn't get a whole lot of details about the rules in the city, and maybe a defining characteristic that you have in common is a necessity to be a couple. I don't know, or it's just been the way they've been told that's how relationships work, because literally every single partnership in the movie was based on a common characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's like a rule to be together in the city or whatever might be the case, but
yeah, I suppose. I still just, I don't know, like, yeah, they, it was a love story, but I don't think it was like a great love conquers all type love story.
Oh no, it's not mushy. It was just a cute like love story.
Yeah.
It was no Cold Mountain, is what you're saying.
Sure, yeah. No Cold Mountain between us.
I love you, Cold Mountain. And then the mountain doesn't say anything back.
Because it's cold.
Because it's cold.
Have a heart.
Mm-hmm. Facts. Anyway, a part of the story, I really liked the audio, like the music of this movie. I thought it
was very good.
Yes, it was disturbing at points, and it had like it very much like the killing of a sacred deer was like an eerie sounding quality to it. I really appreciated it.
And at times when they ramped up the absurdity, the music choices lent to, like when the first time we're shown the hunt and it's all slow motion and showing in this classical music and John C. Reilly's just stumbling over and they're shooting at these people with tranquilizer darts. And I mean, it just ramped up the absurdity, the way it was filmed and the music choices. And I thought it was good. And if I remember right, I wasn't on the Sacred Deer episode, but you guys admitted that The Killing of the Sacred Deer is a well-made movie, and I don't think that's a problem with any of Yorgos Lanthimos movies. This is a very well-made movie.
Yeah,
whether you like the style or story, it's a well-crafted movie
for sure.
Like I said, this is the only movie of his that I've seen, and you seem like you've seen a few of them. Like, are all his similar in like how the dialogue is? And this where it's like real awkward and
the Sacred Deer is natural. It takes it to another level of
Sacred Deer
awkwardness and roboticness.
Because like
the Favorite isn't nearly like this at all. I mean, it is a little. The lines they deliver are awkward, but it's more human in their delivery, unlike this.
Because like the dialogue in this movie, and it's nothing on the actors, because obviously it's how it's written and supposed to be directed and all that, but it seems almost like a junior high play with two kids just talking to each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that kind of took me out of the movie. And like, I understand that's what they were going for, but I think that kind of took me out of this movie a lot.
See, and I think, like I said at the beginning, I think it worked because of the absurdity of the entire story and universe this is in. And it did create some funny moments, like the moment in the woods between John C. Reilly's character and Colin Farrell's character when he's
when he trying finds to him,
play on his, you're my best friend. Whatever I need to think of somebody, I think of you. And it's just really awkward and funny at the same time. And
that part kind of got me a little bit too, because he was like, well, you always hung, I forget the other guy's name, like Jonathan or whatever his name was. Like, you always seem to hang out more with him. He's like, well, no, I mean, you're always my best friend. And it just... But yeah, just in general, the movie is a little a little weird for me, I guess. And then not only the dialogue is weird, like when the maid comes in and just like grinds on Colin Farrell's character.
Well,
like,
she explains it.
Yeah, yeah, I know, it but it's purpose. Still, it's weird. Like,
no, Brent, that's the point. It's not.
Yeah, Brent.
I know it's supposed to be weird. I get
no,
that.
You didn't see the killing of the sacred deer. The whole awkward sexual moments. Again, ramped up to a new level in the killing of a sacred deer.
Yeah,
like, it's just a Yorgos Lanthimos thing.
Well, I talked about that in Killing of the Sacred Deer. I was like, it didn't make any sense. Why? And at least in this movie, they gave an explanation.
Well, no, they do explain it, but it's just like, I don't know, that happened. Like, she walks in, she's like, "All right, spread your legs." I'm like, what? Yeah. What's going on here?
I was also like, can you not? It's really just the worst.
And then the way he acts when she's done, he's like, "A few more minutes," and she just walks away. Oh, you're terrible. It's like, I think the awkwardness of the delivery, especially Colin Farrell's one of those guys where he the way he can deliver a line with his facial features. Like in Seven Psychopaths.
I was just thinking
about
that. When
he's just reacting to the story that is being told. It's like, he doesn't have to. It's just the way his face looks in a situation makes the situation funny.
Yeah, when Billy Bickle's going through the whole graveyard scene. Dude, that legitimately might be one of my favorite movies.
Oh, for sure. And I don't know. People probably wouldn't put Colin Farrell up as one of the best actors, but man, I do love the guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's like Colin Farrell. Like, he can be great, but then I think he chooses some movies that it's just like, why are you doing that one? Like when he did Total Recall remake and stuff like that. It's like, pick better movies, man.
Well, I mean, come on. I don't blame him for choosing that. It's a remake of a very popular movie, and then you had Beckinsale as the female lead, and just because it ended up being awful doesn't mean.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, because that was also, I don't know, kind of when he was bigger. Like now, Colin Farrell, he's still like big, but he's more big in like these type of movies. He doesn't do a whole lot of, you know, blockbuster movies
anymore. Yeah,
wasn't he in I didn't see him, but wasn't he in those new Harry Potter movies?
You're talking about the, what are they called? The Finding of the, God, this is going to be awful.
Yep. It already is. Why don't we know this? Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yep.
It is.
That was the first one. I think he was in that one. Another one came out. I don't know if he was in that one or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you guys want me to ruin it for you?
No.
I've seen Fantastic Beasts. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Because he's the bad guy.
Oh. Yeah.
But he's not the bad guy.
He's going to be in the new Batman movie, remember?
Huh?
He's going to be in the new Batman movie.
Who's going to? The Pangling?
The Pangling.
Pangling?
Pangling? God, they should have got Cumberbatch to be.
Dude, I
would any role that has to say the Penguin. Every time they have to mention, like, a news story breaks about the Penguin, he's got to be the one to read it.
Penguins.
That video, this is a tangent, but that video, I think, is made all the more funny because he legitimately did not know, and he's like, "Yeah, I went the whole time recording, and nobody told me I was saying it wrong."
Yes, no. He was like, "This is a bigger budget thing for a documentary, and no one had the gall to come up to you and say you're saying that wrong." It was so funny.
Also, I'm looking at Colin Farrell's filmography, and this just got me really excited. I remember reading about this, but apparently, it's in a real thing in pre-production. A new Martin McDonagh movie with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson again. Same team up from In Bruges. I'm on board already.
That's Martin
In Bruges too.
No, not
quite. Brugier. Let's talk. I want to talk about the end of, getting back on track, the end of The Lobster.
Yep.
does he do it? For those, okay, so hopefully our listeners have seen the movie at this point because we have spoiled a few things, blah, 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 blah.
Or, I mean, the synopsis was pretty clear. You have to be in a relationship or you get turned into an animal.
Yeah.
What we didn't touch on is kind of, there's this group in the woods, they call themselves the loners, and they're hiding from society because they don't want to be part of a relationship, and they ban that.
Right.
But Colin Farrell goes from the hotel where he's being forced into a relationship, escapes to these loners, and then finds love and has to escape from the loners themselves. And
yeah.
And the ending is
the girl that he falls in love with.
Yes.
They're both short-sighted. That's their defining characteristic. But the girl is made blind. And so at the end of the movie, they go to a diner and you see him in the bathroom with a knife like an inch away from his eyes, and then it cuts to black.
Because it cuts
back to her sitting at a table.
That's right.
And the whole idea is because she went blind, they no longer have that one defining characteristic in common of short-sightedness.
Right.
So now that she can't see, he's going to take his own sight with his knife. And I think he does it, but maybe to Brent's point, if their love, because their love really wasn't based on having this in common. It just happened to be that. So maybe he decides not to, and they go on without having that one thing in common because they love each other. Who knows?
Or he just lies maybe, again.
Well, yeah. Yeah, or he just lies like he did in the previous relationship to pretend there's something in common. She'd never know.
Yeah.
So I don't know, and maybe that's why he left it like that, so because it's a talking point. I personally lean toward, yeah, he did it, because they were all so desperate to have that thing in common, the whole movie, that I think for them, it's a necessity.
Yeah, I also think he did it, but it was funny, as soon as the movie ended, I was watching this with my girlfriend, and she goes, oh yeah, I forgot that he doesn't do it, and I was like, what? How did you get that? Because I thought the exact opposite. I thought he did it. So I don't know.
Left up into interpretation, I guess. Yeah. I was half expecting, like, because when they cut back to her sitting at the table, like, you could see, like, outside. I was just half expecting him to walk by outside the window, just walking away.
They love each other, Brent.
Yeah. That's your mushy-gushy stuff, Brent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, remember when... it's its own brand of mushy love in romance. Like when she does go blind and he's just kind of devastated because they don't have anything in common, and then he shows up a few days later and they had developed the secret code of sign language, like lay on your belly and then do all these actions, and now that he can't see her, he just walks up to her and explains the actions that he would have been doing to And it's, I don't know, it's their own type of romance. I think it was, and then the one part that was really good, Colin Farrell, the way, again, it's just the way he looks as he delivers it. When he's trying to train her other senses after she's blinded, so he gives her something to feel and smell, and she has to guess it. He gives her a tennis ball, and she guesses it's a kiwi, and he's like, yep, 10 out of 10, you got it. And it's like, you can tell he's hurt by it, but he plays it off.
Yep. God, yeah, this I like this movie.
I do. Also, another thing I wanted to bring up. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Another little piece that really adds to the world without being in the forefront is there are a lot of these scenes where you're showing these conversations, these interactions between people, and like off to the side or in the background, there's just this animal that really doesn't belong in the situation. Like there, at one point, there's a peacock, or they're in the middle of the woods, and there's a, there's like a pony or whatever. It's just weird animals, but just showing that these are the former hotel people that didn't find love, and it just kind of adds to the world a little bit.
Oh yeah, I think that's a very good part about showing and not telling.
Because once your eyes catch it, you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Because there were probably way more than I caught, but you see like four or five of them, and you're like, that's funny. Like, and then they have that whole discussion early on about like what animal they want to be and why most people are stupid and pick dogs. And
yeah.
Stuff. It's so funny.
His brother, the dog, sitting there.
Yeah. Oh, God. Are we ready to rate it? Are we at that point?
Yeah, I think so. I am, anyways.
Sure, why not?
Cool. You know what? I will go first. I picked it. I'll go first. I think this movie is a solid 7.75 for me. It's very well made, very well made.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Dunny.
Just and like the structure of that sentence.
You know it. Finger pistols. No, I think it's accessible enough for most people to watch it. And
well, it's on Netflix, so.
I mean, like.
I got it. It was a joke.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Hold on.
Excellent!
Great joke. Excellent joke. I think it's weird enough for most people to watch it and be like, all right, that's weird. I get it. It was weird, though. You know, and not like, that was weird and I hate it. You know?
Like The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
The Killing of a Sacred Deer, or what was the other movie with it was like a pedophile movie. What movie?
Oh, God. Oh, Happiness?
That was that's a movie that I can never watch that movie again.
Yep, I've seen it and I don't like to think about it and I forget about it until you bring it up on the podcast.
Hey, I don't bring it up. I do, but not often. Because that movie scarred me for life.
Yeah. The fact that people like it too is what baffles me. But I guess there are people that probably hate movies like this, so whatever.
Fair point. Aaron, do you want to go next?
I'm right there. That was the score I had coming into this, was 7.75. I did really enjoy it. It's just the awkwardness, and it makes me smile just watching these interactions and how weird and awkward it is, but enjoyable to me, much more so than Killing of a Sacred Deer. And you still do, like you said, the great soundtrack, very good directing.
Yep.
I like the way he tells his story, where it's a lot of show don't tell mixed in with these specific oddities that he's known for. But yeah, 7.75, and I personally would recommend it. Not everybody's gonna like it, but I would recommend it.
Right. Brent?
I am not with you guys on that one. It's a well-made movie. On that aspect, there's really not anything wrong with that, so I can't dock it for that. And like, it really just is a taste. Like, you have to have a certain type of taste to enjoy the movie.
Sure.
And there were some parts that, you know, I would maybe, well, that's okay, and I would kind of chuckle at a little bit. Like, I don't know why, but like, I kind of did laugh when John C. Reilly and the other guy like start their little like hit fight with each other. But I'm not nearly as close as you guys are. I'm going to go with 4.5 people turning into animals.
All right. I did not see that coming, in all honesty.
I think I did. And I think Shane and maybe even Steve and Matt would probably be closer to Brent's score, to be honest.
They would probably be lower. Shane would probably give us like a 2.
Yeah. I agree. All right, so 6.67, close to 666, but thankfully not. 6.67 for The Lobster. That is a solid C+. So let's play a quick game of
Pop Quiz, asshole.
This or Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Probably this.
I'd say this.
I don't really remember. I don't remember a lot about that movie, so I would probably say that just so I could kind of get a refresher course on it.
Sure. This or Saw?
The first Saw, or the Saw?
I'd probably say this just because of the number of times I've seen Saw. And I think the impact of Saw is not quite there once you've seen it and know it.
Yeah. This or The Color of Money?
That's another one I don't remember a lot about.
I think I go that just because I would enjoy watching a Paul Newman performance.
Okay. This or Lawless?
Probably Lawless. This.
I'd say Lawless. I think it's a toss-up. This or Catch Me If You Can?
Maybe this, actually. Catch Me If You Can just... feels like a really long movie. I mean, it's a long movie, but it feels like it.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that.
Yeah. This or It?
Never seen it.
It.
How have you never seen It?
He hasn't seen it. Just not interested.
All right, that's fair. I'm not knocking you for it. It's just that I find it interesting. Last one. This or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, probably. That's one of those, again, it's kind of that quirky type of movie, but I think I probably lean toward that a little bit.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. So again, 6.67 for The Lobster. We are continuing on with our streaming movies of the summer. So get your requests in at moviereviewcrew.com. You can request them right on our homepage. Also, again, please like, join, subscribe on all of our channels. We have quite a few reviews on iTunes. So please continue to like, review, and subscribe. We really appreciate it all. Matt's pick is next week. And Aaron, you kind of had the idea of, we've been talking about doing an animated film.
Yeah, because we tried it once and it was a bit of a disaster.
A little bit, a little bit.
It's hard to talk about, though.
I don't think so. Cartoon. I think we just need to understand animation a little bit better.
And pick a better movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, The Iron Giant is a good movie. I don't blame that choice.
Also, I really, I talked about this actually a while ago. I want to review Rango on this.
Yeah. See, but that's a little different though, because of the technology used. I'm talking about just straight up drawings animated.
I mean, not drawings. It's all 3D.
No, but the old Batman movie from the,
yeah, no, I get it. But yeah, you said Mask of the Phantasm, the Batman film,
is now
on Netflix.
That's truly one of my favorite. It's rated PG, but it is kind of an adult type of movie just because of the themes and the way it's played out. But yeah, I absolutely recommend it, and I'm going to try to convince Matt to pick it maybe to give this another shot at an animated movie.
All right. Well, hopefully we can coerce him into it. So again, join us next week for another review. Anything else, guys?
Nope.
All right, someone on the show.
Tell your friends.
Hey, guys. Oh, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
Good day, sir. Sir, I said good day.
Yeah. See ya.
Hasta la vista, baby.
This has been
the Movie Review Crew Podcast. Remember to find us online on your favorite social media apps and go to our website, moviereviewcrew.com.
Yeah. Linger, man.
Yeah, totally.
Linger.
Hardcore.